Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. My name is Magla Pillay, and today I have here in the studio with me Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. The format of today's show is called Socratic Dialogue, which is a method of putting questions to another in order to elicit a universal truth. It comes from the name Socrates, as you can see by the Grecian background. The purpose of today's show and this entire series is to look at and to cause you to look at your own set of ethics, morals, your own conscience, your own value system, and to simply ask the question, is it working for you? Is it causing you harm? Is it causing the people that you love and your colleagues and friends harm? That is the criteria. And we find that although most people would like to believe that they want to do the right thing in any given situation, they do tend to act against their conscience, and Sister Denise wants to examine why this is the case. Today's subject matter is particularly interesting. Sister Denise is going to look at how it is that power corrupts. How power corrupts. Sister Denise, a very, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
It is always a pleasure to have you here. Tell us, please, what in this context, what do you mean by the word power?
Power, influence, power over people. You're in a powerful position. You have the power of money. You are in some way or another able to affect people's lives. People are dependent on you, at your mercy. This is power. And people are very hungry for power.
Why?
It makes them feel good. I think the weaker a person is spiritually, the more they're hungry for power. And that's very dangerous, because somebody who is spiritually very weak and in a position of power, they will abuse that power quite easily. So this is how it corrupts people, because you can get away with it. You are immune to the immediate consequences of your action. Of course, the law of karma operates, but still, you know, you feel good if you can get people to do whatever you say with and not make any objection because they're afraid of you or something like this.
Okay, so take us through the mechanism of how power actually corrupts an individual. The thought processes, the speech, behavior. Does it happen instantly? Does it happen over a period of time?
People do not really know who they are. And so a child will be told, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the child will say, oh, train driver. A lot of children like to be train drivers. The parent will say, no, that's not a very good one. You won't get much money. You won't get much prestige. You should be a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, so you can have money, so you can have prestige, so people will respect you. And so the child says, do I really need that? You know, oh yeah, you do. And it's sort of later in life that a person starts to find these things necessary, and then they go after them. And this is because what they are within themselves is not enough for them. And so they will look for something to, you know, sort of fill out their insufficiency as people. So they look for status symbols, they look for, you know, something so that in comparison with other people they look better, or they have a lot of people who answer to them, or they can say, you know, off with his head or something like this. And then they get a thrill, they get a high from this, and this is very corrupting.
Okay, so if somebody is faced with this, where you see somebody in front of you in a position of influence who's been corrupted, how do you protect yourself from such corruption?
Well, one of the things I do, which is I think quite useful, is I ask people, because people are often faced with something like this, I ask them, okay, is it better to be a weak soul in a powerful position, or a powerful soul in a weak position? And they always give me the same answer. I want to be a powerful soul, because even if I'm in a weak position, if I'm a powerful soul, I won't be in a weak position forever, you know. But the weak soul in a powerful position, you really don't want to be that, because if you're weak, that power will consume you, will overtake you, will get you to destroy yourself by doing really negative karma. So it's dangerous.
Okay, so managing it, how does one manage if you're in the sphere of somebody who fits this profile that you just described, a powerful yet corrupt person? How do you protect yourself with using your spirituality from such a negative influence?
Well, if I look at myself, I think that I'm a powerful soul, so that's good. And I'm very often in quite a weak position, but I kind of don't care, because I think, well, I'm a powerful soul, so I'm not hungry for power. You know, I know I'm a powerful soul. I don't need it to be proved. You know, I'm okay without any of the trappings of power. But what does happen is, okay, sometimes someone will come along and say, okay, here's a position, you know, and it's like an attempt to corrupt you. Say, okay, here's a position. Now you've got power in your hands because you have a position. You can tell people what to do and they will obey you, you see. So it tempts, you see. And so you have to be a person who really has very powerful standards of your own conduct, because there is nothing external to stop you doing whatever you can think of. So a person in a position of power has to really know how to wield power, because it's a dangerous energy. So the first thing you have to do if you have power is to make sure that anybody who's impressed with you because of your power, you have to do something to take that out. You have to show them that you're just another human being like everybody else, so that you pull them away from putting you on this pedestal. But if you are attracted by that and you get a high from it, you won't do that. And that means you're starting down the road to iniquity.
Just by being impressed.
Just by other people being impressed by you. I said, you don't allow that. And then you also don't allow yourself to be impressed by other people. Because eventually, well, the bottom line is, final analysis is, all of us are just basic human beings and we're playing roles. So sometimes our role is a position of power, but it doesn't exempt us from being called to account by the laws of karma. So always it's very important to realize that, you know, God is assessing me at all times. Because eventually I have to come in front of God and account for my actions. You see? So this is a very important thing to remember. Then the next thing is that if you are in a position of power and you really do have influence over people's lives, those lives are sacred. So you have to be very careful that you influence them in a very beneficial way. And in every social situation, there are people in positions of power and people with no power. So in a family, the person with the most power is the father, you know, and the person with the least power is the youngest girl child. you see. And then anywhere in between is this ladder, you see. And then anyone who is in a bit of a position of power is having possibilities to abuse that power. And whether you abuse it or not is what determines what kind of character, what kind of quality of person you are. So to choose to never abuse your power is a sign of a good person, a great person.
Hmm. You used an interesting concept, terminology, hunger for external power. Is wanting to be the medical superintendent of a hospital a hunger for power? Is it a sign of a strength or weakness to have such an ambition?
Well, I think you need to look further. Now, why do you want to be that? Is it because you want to look good, or is it because you want to improve the condition of the hospital? Is it because you have a calling? Why exactly do you want that? Mm-hmm. I think motivations are very important, and we have to really find out, okay, what is the reason behind this?
Okay, so motivation affects it how? Your intention affects it how?
Well, you ask a person, okay, why do you want to be the superintendent of the hospital? Oh, well, because, you know, then everybody will respect me. That's not a good reason. Are you qualified?
Mm-hmm.
What are the qualifications, you know? Mm-hmm. Or maybe if you're in a position, then people will start giving you bribes and you want to get rich, and that's why you want the position, you know. Why do you want that position?
Mm-hmm. You used a term that sits well with me. You said lives are sacred. Is every single life on earth sacred?
I believe so, because every single soul is a child of God. Now, if you're a child of God and you're playing the role of some monstrous person, that's unfortunate. So you should feel happy that you're not in that role. But you still, that person's life is still sacred.
Okay, so if one looks at the shockingly large number of people who are living in abject poverty, who on a human level, people say, these lives are worth nothing. That is what you would call conventional morality, won't you?
I suppose so, yes. Mm. So conventional morality tends to be biased towards the wealthy, the happy, you know, people who are okay. It's very much biased towards them, and people who are not in a good situation, well, they probably deserve it anyway, you see, so why should I care about them?
Okay, so whether,
that's not very good.
Whether you're speaking about the prime minister of a country or the homeless vagabond lying in the street, both lives are sacred and both are equal in the eyes of God.
What makes a life specially valuable has to do with the charity that they do, or the acts they do which are of benefit to other people, because every life is sacred, but no two souls are equal, because some of them have greater power than others, inner power. Some of them are much more benevolent than others, and so to calculate the value of a soul, you look at their karma over a long period of time. And this is why some souls are venerated and some souls are despised, you see. It's all to do with their karma.
Is it not a natural human instinct to want to gravitate towards more power as you rise up, for example, the corporate ladder?
Well, people want money,
yes,
influence,
respect,
things, respect, yes, naturally. And it's a natural instinct for a person to want to improve. But the thing is, if you are rising because of a motive to cause harm or to just enrich yourself at other people's expense, or to just look good, or whatever, that doesn't make you great, and that karma means that this power that you're looking for is not going to stay with you very long, you see. Whereas if you are a person who seeks to serve, who seeks to benefit, then, you know, you can't avoid arising, because that's the consequence of those kinds of actions. But you will get power, not because you're hungry for it, but because it's the automatic consequence of your action, and you will be in a way indifferent to it, and so it will not corrupt you.
What measures should one take against being corrupted? You hear the phrase, everyone has their price. Scary, but unfortunately true for many. So if you find yourself in a position of power, or you're gravitating towards a position of power, how do you make yourself uncorruptible? That is the spiritual perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, I think always to keep yourself answerable to God. You know, never forget that no matter how high your position is, still God is over you. You're always answerable. Mm-hmm. And you're always being assessed, you know, because life is a university. And okay, if you're given a role...
Life is a university.
It's
okay,
cool.
We'll come back to that just now. Finish your sentence.
So if you keep yourself, you say, okay, I have this role to be in this position of power, but there is enormous responsibility that comes with that. So you have to be very conscious of fulfilling the responsibility and always keep God over you, because you're answerable, and you also get protection and help and guidance from God in your position of power. Then you will not be corrupted.
Okay. And he the only one who can fulfill that role?
Oh yeah, because God is pure.
Okay, so God's purity protects you from corruption.
Yes.
Life is a university. You dropped that bomb in the middle of a sentence. Tell us more about life being university.
Well, every circumstance and situation that we find ourselves in contains the possibility of a lesson that we can learn. So we have to be always looking for how can I improve myself as a person by learning more lessons, greater wisdom, greater understanding, greater depth, you know, because your own life is a work in progress, and it's never going to be finished until you end of your life.
Okay, so Sister Denise, if somebody wants to add integrity to wherever they are at, how do they go about doing it? And I know something tells me you're going to speak about spiritual integrity, which is different from normal integrity. How do they infuse that into their way of being so that they remain free from corruption around them, corruption inside of them?
Well, integrity also means that you're whole, you're complete.
Mm.
A person who is broken in some way, disintegrated in some way, they will be operating from a perspective that they're trying to cover it up. So there'll be a lot of falseness in that. A person of integrity is all the time true to themselves. They know themselves. They're not trying to pretend to be something else, you know. So of course this is, a few people are like this, we need more like this, but anyway, again, I think always keeping God over the top of you, you see, and measuring your actions against, well, what would God want me to do? Is this right in the eyes of God? Is it right in my own eyes? You know, being concerned about is it right more than am I pulling the wool over somebody's eyes, or am I getting away with something? That is very different motivation, you see. Because always you want to be a good quality person. Because you see, when you're aware of yourself as a soul, you will have to live with yourself forever, and that's a long time.
Forever is a long time, yes.
So if you're not right with yourself, you don't want to be such a person.
Okay. So there's somebody watching the show who has acquired some funds through corrupt means. Okay? Or it was given to him, and he knows that the depositor was corrupt. And now he wants to redeem himself, perhaps redeem the depositor. If you've been corrupt and you realize that the harm that it's caused you, you realize the damage that is done to your spirit, and you do not want to be this person any further, is there a way, is there retribution for you?
Well, I'm what sure there's plenty of retribution, but what you want is, can I, having gone down this long road, how do I redeem myself? How do I come out of it? There is a book called The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which describes how this man was headhunted. He was taken to this amazing apartment, a beautiful woman was there, and explains, okay, I'm your mentor, I'm going to train you. And everything looked like absolutely above board and clean. And after some time, he found that he was being groomed to be actually something very, very criminal, legal, but not good at all. And eventually crossed over to the line of illegal, but it was too late because you get caught, you know, and there's a whole system for this. And it involves vast sums of money, countries, you know, it's a huge thing, big business, big corporations, and so on and so forth. And he was in it for several years until he started to realize that he really, really did not want to be in this. And the book describes his process of extrication from it. It was a very complicated process. But I mention this because it's a very, very good analysis of how you get in and how you get out, and it's very difficult to get out.
Okay. So if somebody has quite a large sum of money through corrupt means, and they've seen the light and wants to perform an act of redemption, but they've already, you know, live in the castle, got the cars, how do they put it right?
You see, this is a very hypothetical question.
Okay.
We have to really take it case by case and see an individual who comes to you and says, okay, I'm in this situation, what do? You have to really analyze the situation, see all of the options, and then choose one.
Okay, can you settle that negative karma by doing a positive karma?
Well, there's something called conscience money.
Oh, do tell.
You know, there are people who, you know, do a lot of negative things to get money, and then they'll take a percentage of that and give it to a charity, and then they'll feel better.
And that's not on?
Well, it's not enough.
What is enough?
You have to really come totally clean.
That can offset the negative karma.
You have to come clean. Completely clean.
With yourself or before someone something?
With yourself and before someone something and all that. Yes.
Okay. Is it a question of forgive me, Father, for I have sinned?
Well, that might be included.
Okay.
But there may be a lot more in that. Mm. The thing is this, you know, eventually everyone has to die.
Mm.
And it is at that point that they face the consequences of their karma of this life. You think when you die it's over and that's the end of it, but it's not, because the soul is immortal, and when you leave your body you have to face the consequences of your karma, and there is a great deal of settlement in between births that takes place, which spiritual knowledge also talks about. So this is why people are afraid of death.
Hmm.
And so if you keep your karma clean, in a sense, you're all the time preparing for your death, so that when you do die, salute, okay, clean karma, see you, let's go.
Okay, Sister Denise, unfortunately we can talk no further on this show because we've come to the end of this segment. Thank you so much at home for joining us. Sister Denise shared how power corrupts a soul and how the spiritually empty tend to look for positions of power. That is a very interesting statement. And also she shared that even though you may be in a position of power, how if one is pulled towards corrupt speech and behavior, how you can stop it simply by allowing your own conscience to intervene and asking yourself what is right and what is wrong. One is not sentenced to a life of corruption. It's not a life sentence. You have a choice at every juncture. And Sister Denise also shared that one can offset one's past corruption by performing pure karma, which I think is very interesting. Okay, so there's hope for us all. I think that is the message that was sent today, and I hope you found the content of this talk interesting and of value to you, and we hope that you are able to put it into your life on some practical level. Thank you and goodbye for today.